And now it is my distinct privilege to introduce our first speaker, who's come a long way to share with us. So please welcome, a warm welcome for Louisa R. from Roma, Italy.
Hi, my name is Louisa and I'm an addict. And I'm a bit shaky because I'm unfortunately a shy sharer. But I'm extremely grateful to be standing here and have this opportunity to share with you. My share with my experience of sponsorship is very different from what I hear most of you share. You came into the fellowship and you had a sponsor in NA and you went the whole way through, you know, with that same sponsor. And that's wonderful. And I must say I envy you when I hear you sharing like that. But my situation is very different. And if you had been born where I was born, when I was born, you would probably have the same story I have. I came into recovery in London in 1975. And NA did not exist then. It didn't exist in Europe. So my first sponsor, my first experience of the program was in the other fellowship. Right? Okay, forgive me, but that's the truth. I come from a totally dysfunctional family, and my mother was in the other fellowship, and I was using, I thought that I would never end up like her, you know, she was a disgrace. I had a convent upbringing and obviously full of resentment towards her when she finally came into recovery. When she came into recovery, I said, right, now I'm going to enjoy myself. But I wouldn't drink, and so I thought I could, you know, smoke dope and coke and generally put it about. And in a very short amount of time, I became addicted to heroin. So finally, after a few years of that and going in and out, I would quite often check myself into rehab because I knew that that was not the way I wanted to live or die. There wasn't rehab. There were clinics that you could go to who would give you, sort of keep you locked up until you cleaned up. I sought help through my mother and her friends in the fellowship. And I was put in a psychiatric hospital and given Largactyl for a few weeks to wean me off. And one of her friends befriended me. He had been married to my auntie for a short time. His name was Paddy O'Key. And I'm deeply indebted to him because his friendship really saved my life. I was 27 years old, and the average age of people in the program at that time was between 50 and 60. When I first came around, I looked around and thought, do I really want to sort of live the rest of my life in these rooms? But things were that bad that, yes, I did. And Paddy O'C befriended me. As I say, he got me into hospital. He visited me in hospital. Now, it was strange because he would say to me, all right, I'm going to come and visit you again next Tuesday. And he would phone me up on the Monday and say, I'm coming in to see you. And by this time, I was just like, you know, heavily sedated. And I would say, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then in the morning, I would wake up and I would, you know, we were allowed out during the day. And I would end up going out and I'd forget. And I'd come back in the afternoon. He'd been sitting there for maybe 3 or 4 hours waiting for me with a packet, you know, bag full of cigarettes and sweets. And he was just so amazing to me. And I asked him at one point if he'd be my sponsor. And he said, I'm not going to be a sponsor, I'll be your friend. And that's what he was. He was a friend to me. And he gave me some employment so that I would have enough money for cigarettes. He worked in a market, and I would go to help him in the market. But sometimes he used to say to me, "Sure, it would be cheaper to keep your cigarette, to keep your photograph, than to keep you," because I was always eating and smoking. So you know, basically, he shared his interpretation of the program, and that was that when a newcomer comes in, we don't see through the newcomer; we see the newcomer through. We support them, we give them the love and the help, you know, that they want. He used to say to me, when a newcomer comes around, do they want the basic text or a bacon sandwich? And I'd say, well, you know, the basic, you know, the big book, basic text. No, he'd say, they're hungry. You put your hand in your pocket and you buy them a sandwich. This is the message he gave me. And I listened. He brought me to hospital meetings because he'd found recovery, not hospital, prison meetings. He found recovery in a prison. And so I had a few months recovery, and he said, well, you come with me to the prison. And I'd say, oh, I don't know what to say. What will I say? And I just don't know what to say. And he'd say, you don't have to say anything. Just wear a mini skirt and turn up. How has recovery changed in these years? Yeah? Men with men, women with women. So there you are. This is my story. And I'm not advocating this. I'm just telling you how it was. And let me see if I can, just in case I'm forgetting anything here. He had another great theory, and that was that we should never tell each other what to do. He used to say, you remember when you're helping somebody else, never tell them what to do because you're suffering from a mental illness. So how do you know what to tell them? All you can tell them is what you would do if you were in that situation or what you did if you had that experience. But never tell another addict what to do. And over the years, this is a message that I got, and this is what kept me coming back, you know. Again, in my first days of recovery, I guess in the first 3 months, I had a sort of pink cloud when I was just euphoric and happy, and that sort of dissolved, and I was overcome by a terrible rage of what my addiction had robbed me of, you know. It had robbed me of a part of my life. It had robbed me of my dignity, of my sanity. I was just lost and destroyed. I'd had an abortion. I couldn't have children. I was just wrecked, you know. And I would talk to him, and I'd say, oh, I was only 27. But I'd say, everybody else I know is married, and now look at me. You know, who's going to marry me? You know, like. And he used to say to me, here he'd say, take these few pennies and go make a phone call and call somebody up who's worse off than you are. And I used to say, nobody is worse off than I am. I'm just been telling you what a mess I'm in. You know, who am I going to? And he used to say, do you remember you took the phone number of that lady at the meeting the other night? She's still using. Go and call her. She's worse off than you are. Call her. And so that's what I started to do. So after a couple of years, I went to live in Italy. I went there for the weekend to buy a handbag and some boots, and I ended up meeting this guy and getting married. Not the fellowship, you know, an ordinary guy. And NA didn't exist, as I say, and so for a few years I hung around English-speaking other fellowship, but I really, really wanted so much to be able to sit in a meeting and talk about my addiction. I used to have this great thing that I wanted to be able to say that I had shot up in the back of my hand. Now, I haven't actually said that at a meeting really ever, you know, but In the other fellowship, it was very difficult for me to share because, you know, some people would take umbrage and say, oh, yeah, she's talking about drugs. And so I always had to be very careful what I said. And so I had a burning desire to talk about this fellowship and this program. And in Italy at that time, there were communities, comunità, they were religious groups of people that would take addicts, and they would keep them sort of parked away from the rest of society for 1, 2, 3 years. And in some cases, if they tried to escape, people would go out, get them, bring them back, and they would chain them. People even got killed in these places. And I would sit there, and I would so suffer, you know, think about this extraordinary program we have that gives us the freedom to live, you know, without being taken away and cleaned out. Or, do you know what I mean? It's so extraordinary. But there was, I would go around, you know, talk to hospital directors and ask them, you know, if they had an addict that they'd given up on, you know, that no one could help, could I talk to that guy? And finally, anyway, I did talk to some people. Sometimes I got responses of, oh, you know, you come over here on your charger and you think you're going to bring NA, you know, but here in Italy everything is different, you know, and it won't work here. What works over in America and in England, you know, won't work here. But anyway, finally a lady came in, and she had never had any experience drinking. She had only used drugs, pharmaceutical drugs, and so NA in Italy was born. And we started holding our meetings. And the principles that I learnt kept me well. I sponsored, I always did service, obviously. NA grew, we've grown very, very slowly. But, you know, sponsorship is something that I don't think I'm particularly good at, but I've always done it, you know, and I've always been there for the addict. I'm one of those people that will, you know, I'm not one of those, like, rule people, you know, you have to call me, I won't call you. I will call up a sponsee. I will, you know, in the beginning of my recovery, for the first 20 years of my recovery, I was probably a bit more, you know, like, I wouldn't be very friendly to people I was sponsoring, because I felt I had to sort of be detached from them so that I could be more sort of... But, yeah, then a whole load of things happened to me. My marriage broke up, and my husband of 17 years asked me for a divorce. And that was really catastrophic for me, you know, because I had very much related recovery and family life as one thing, you know. So when that broke down, and in fact I went so loopy that the people that I'd been sponsoring for a few years, I had to step away from them, you know, because I started acting out and having relationships with various people. And, you know, misbehaving generally, and I didn't feel that I should sponsor anybody. If you can relate to that, anybody? Has anybody ever done that? Okay. So it was a sort of catastrophic time in my recovery. Everything, all my rules and regulations changed, you know. I for the first time I went into therapy. I had a whole load of issues to deal with, and I'm really glad I did that. I wish I'd done it a lot earlier. And I came out from that, from the ringer, a very different person. I began sponsoring again. I've always done service. And if today I have 36 years of recovery, yeah. It's because of service. Sponsorship has always given me so much more, I think, than I've ever given anybody. And if there's one way of never forgetting where I came from, it's through sponsoring. Keeps the memory ever green of what active addiction is like. So yes, I've worked through the steps. Now, I have to admit that in first 20 years of my recovery, I only had male sponsors. How bad is that? And But I had a lot of issues with women, and you see, I think that the program is so miraculous because I think that I have stayed clean in spite of myself. You know, the love of this program, the power of this program, and the power of my higher power has kept me clean, even though I've always been subversive and done everything wrong. And that's because of Paddy, you know, my first guy, my firstborn. So he used to say, don't become a Mrs. A-A-N-A, you know, just work the program the best you can. So for me, today's sponsoring is like, working the steps with people. I've gone back to sponsoring newcomers if they would ask me to. And I've even offered to sponsor a couple of people recently, people that, you know, have been around for years and never managed to stay clean. I think the greatest miracle for me is, miracle's a bad word. The greatest joy for me is when I hear someone that I'm working the program with begin to have faith in a power greater than themselves, you know, that new awakening. And it's a real honor to be part of that process and watch that spiritual awakening take place in other people's lives, you know. I'm a great believer in that principle of diversity. And the way Paddy explained that to me right at the very beginning was he used to say, any meeting is like a vase of flowers, you know. You have 10, 20 flowers, and each flower is different. And that is how the program is. Each person that comes in works the program their way, in their time. Right. And I still believe that to be true. So I found that sponsoring can at times also be quite painful. Sometimes I've seen people, we've all had friends, I guess, lost friends along the way. But that doesn't stop me. I'm there. I think that sponsorship is about support, you know? And to know that you can call someone day or night, that's a big gift that we give each other. I do believe there is no therapeutic value like one addict helping another. So I don't know that I can say an awful lot more than that, except sponsorship is just a wonderful gift for me, you know. It's not really so much what I give to the other person as what I get. But as we all know, I'm sure you could teach me a lot more than I could tell you. But anyway, thank you very much for letting me share. God bless you all. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Louisa. And I'd like to now introduce our next speaker, John G. from Hawaii.
Give it up. My name is John. I'm an addict. Aloha. That's what we say. That's what we say. You can see I got laid by a few loving people that love me. I see this room is filled with love, which makes it very easy for me. I'm in my 23rd year of recovery in Narcotics Anonymous. I had less than 30 days. I was told by a man who came into a facility on a Tuesday night doing H&I, he told me I never had to use again when I got out of that locked up detox to go find a meeting. And I went to, my first meeting was AA and it did not work. My first meeting was CA. There was 13 women there and me. And everybody was crying and they were looking at me to speak, and I passed. And then my next night was an AA meeting, and there was some elderly people very lovingly offering me coffee, tea, and cookies, and I did not speak. And my third meeting after I got out of a detox was a Friday night meeting in Yonkers, New York, and there was a whole bunch of you guys there, and there was people making dope deals outside, and there was bikers everywhere, and I just knew I was freaking home. And that was in 88, and I haven't had to use since Narcotics Anonymous saved my life. And I'm here to say that I have the best sponsor in the world for me. He's right there. His name is Fernando. If you don't know him, he's right there. You can wave to me. Don't be shy. And I love that man with all my heart. And if you call that man, his phone will say, peace, love, and happiness, everybody. Peace, love, and happiness, everybody. I don't even have to call him, and I hear that mantra in my head, and he touches me like that. My grand sponsor is here too, from New York, and he told me, enjoy the moment, just don't lie. The grand sponsor came out to me and he says, just lie. You know what I mean? Because there's a lot of people in this room that I love that are here from Hawaii, you know, and not even from Hawaii. There's other people here who know me through my journey and they're here to support me. And, I mean, how blessed is that? I have a member here who came up to me today. I'm a little nervous, you know, that's what we get. And he came up and he goes, you know, you remind me of a pornographic Sunday. Okay, that helped. I'm going to be fine. That really, really helped, man. My sister's here in the front row. Thank you for coming. I have had on my journey three sponsors. The first one I had, his health is really bad right now. He moved away from Hawaii. I had him around 6 years and he moved away. And he told me it would be good if I found another sponsor. But this man saved my life. This man who, at first, I didn't even like him. I mean, I grew up in a house, I had seven sisters. So, like, I do women real well. Like, I do women well. I got them, you know what I mean? Guys, they got my dope. They got the women I want to sleep with. I don't do men well. I never have. And this man was like a biker, and I'm so far from a biker, man. And like, but he had this magic, and he had this talk when he shared in the meeting from his heart. And I only had like about 45 days when I hit Hawaii from New York. My family didn't know what to do with me when I got out of lockout, and they were like, just go to Hawaii, man. Your sister's there. You haven't seen her in 15 years. She was like my running partner. I'm like, just go there, you know. And so, I figured, we called ahead of time. Narcotics Anonymous, yeah, there's three a week. Where are you going? And I'm thinking, coconuts, bras, grass skirts. I don't know if I can do NA there. And like, and it was filled with loving members. And they're here. Some of them are here now. And this man had something about him. And I knew that. He was my sponsor. Because you guys said, you know, find a sponsor, work the steps, get involved. And what's the topic today? It's like awakening the nightmare or walking away from the nightmare or something. Who's got it? It's right there. Are you going to help me here? I have no notes, no nothing. I'm lost. But it's about the nightmare. And I think some of us come into NA, I think a lot of us come into NA, not only with a massive disease of addiction that's trying to kill us in every way, a lot of us get wounded through that disease on our journey. Mine was, my mother committed suicide when I was 11 years old. I had already started smoking pot and drinking. I was really big for my age. Like I said, I was in a house with a lot of kids. She asked me to take out the garbage. I was like in a hurry to walk with some girl to school. And I was like, man, no, fuck you. I hate you, man. I wish you were dead. Get out of my life, man. Out the door I went, you know. And at the time, you know, this was in the 60s. We didn't know. My mother was bipolar. She was a manic depressant. And back then, they had shock therapy. That's all they knew. They knew shock therapy. And they knew, they used to tell my father, sometimes you just got to slap her. Just slap it out of her, man. And as a kid, I never knew it. I'd see my mom come home and she'd be like all whacked. And I'd see, you know, I'd hear my father saying, Nancy, snap out of it, you know. And all of a sudden she was dead. She was checked out. And all I knew was like, I killed her. My little head, and all, the only thing I could wrap around with is it had to do with me, you know, and like, so I never used the word suicide. I never, and like, of course I had to go back to school and kids are all going, oh, that's his mother. Yeah, his mother checked out, man. But we should kill herself. You know, so like, I never cried. I didn't do nothing over it until I got to recovery. So I spent 20 some years in my disease, never dealing with it and never healing. And I got to Narcotics Anonymous, and you guys wanted me to open my mouth to share, to like, you know, like, so I could heal. And like, it was the furthest thing from the world that I wanted to do. All I wanted to do was stop putting dope in me for a little while. I just needed a break. I just needed a time out. And this man from our exchanges early on knew right away that I was not going to make it in this program unless I dealt with this right away. And he made me go into, I don't know if anyone here knows, if you're not from Hawaii, what Keawe is. Keawe is like this bush that's got a million thorns on it. And he suggested, he did very strongly, that I go down into this beautiful bay, Kealakekua Bay, into this place where all this Keawe is. And walk in there and build an altar. And after I had written a bunch of stuff about her, and he made me write her a letter and forgive myself and forgive my disease and just accept who I was and write her a letter about my feelings. And I did this. And here's this macho, tough New York guy who doesn't cry, you know, going into this freaking, I never built an altar before, going into this Keawe patch, man, and I did it. He suggested I do it, and I did it. And I went in there, and I built this little rock altar, and already was coming up. And then I started to read this letter, to send it to her. And I'm telling you, what the throw-up, the purge of emotional crap that I'd been carrying around came out. And I mean, I couldn't even read the letter. I mean, it was just soaking wet and I was just a bottling idiot, and it was just such freedom. And I came out of that and the sky looked brighter and I felt lighter, and I went right to him and I hugged him and I thanked him. And it was one of the greatest gifts in early recovery I've received. And it was part of my fourth step, it was part of my fifth step, and it was the very first part of my ninth step. And this man brought me on this journey, started this journey for me that has been through so much. And the last, two other lessons, two of the greatest gifts that I got from this man was, I was a taker. I liked to take. I could take from you and you and you, and I was a good taker. That was what I did good. One of those guys who could come in the night and take. And the whole basket thing, like, I'd see the basket go around the room, and I was like, here it is, God, and they want money, I need something. You know, when I heard, take what you want, leave the rest, my head was like, I'll take it. I'll take what I need and leave the rest. And I couldn't wrap my head. I didn't want to give you guys no money because I didn't trust you. I didn't believe, you know, I just didn't get it. My sponsor told me about tithings and about why we give, and we can't keep it unless we give it away. And I watched him as he grew, put more and more in the basket. And he told me as I, you know, because when I first got clean, I was unemployable. I picked weeds for $5 an hour, and I was told I had to talk to them because they're going to a better place than a compost. And like, so I was really not an employable kind of guy, you know, and I wasn't giving you a buck. And, but But today I understand that concept, and I think it's really important that we share that with each other, that we cannot keep it unless we give it away. We cannot. And that doesn't matter if it's a buck or not. It's working with an addict, the therapeutic value. It's really important. The other thing that he shared with me was that he helped me through was I had a little over 2 years. And getting squirrely, told me I had to get in service. I had been in service from the gate. I've been in service my entire recovery. I'm the GSR right now to Connie Solution. It's a men's group on Wednesday nights in Kona. Come check out it. If you're a man, it's mandatory. But I was getting squirrely. You know, NA thing was cool. I had a little over 2 years. Yeah, yeah. The Z's were still hanging on my back, pretty heavy. And my daughter in New York, who was living with her mother, who was still using, they were hanging out in a crack house, and that's where she was kind of living. And this guy that I used to do dope with and run with and rip with had, he decided to sexually molest my daughter while she was sleeping, and the disease in his head got scissors, and he like cut her pajamas so like he'd have access, you know, and I found this out, and my animal instinct, all my life experience told me to get back to New York and kill this man. Just take care of business. You don't do that. You don't do that to our children. And he told me, and I use that today. He said, don't do anything for 24 hours. He said, don't do anything for 24 hours. He said, go cry, go sleep, but don't do anything for 24 hours. And I couldn't even sit still. I couldn't. I mean, and he just kept saying, don't do anything for 24 hours. And what happened was he walked me through, like, what I needed to do. We ended up pressing charges, and this man was caught. And he ended up doing his time for his crime, you know. And he was an addict and total disease. And today I pray for him. Today I hope that, like, he might find recovery. He might find what we got. And then the man moved away, and I had to get another sponsor, and now I have this incredible man who's moved to Hawaii, who's in my life today. And also sitting here is my longest living sponsee, and if he thinks he was going to get off clean here, he's wrong. His name's Kenny, he's right there, and I love him very, very much. I say longest living is I had another Kenny in my life. And I was his sponsor. He was a white supremacist. And when I met him and he asked me to be his sponsor, he was the farthest thing from me. I wanted nothing to do. He had a giant tattoo in the middle of his chest. Big white supremacist tattoo, man. And I was just like, and I heard somebody share here earlier that they wanted the sickest ones. Give me the sickest ones. Let me sponsor them. And you know what? I'm the same way. And I took this other Kenny, man, before he relapsed and decided to stick a needle in his arm and think that he could do it the way he used to do it, you know, so many years before, he was all about love. All he cared about was love. All he cared about was loving the entire diverse, amazing fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous we have, you know, and like, he's in my heart, he's on my picture wall, and I love that man. But this Kenny came along a few years later, a couple of years later, and he's my longest living one, and I love him very much. He's the one who, the Hope to Die dope fiend, man, that like, you know, you got to try different things to help stay clean. And as early in his recovery, I gave him some suggestions, and he was like, did nothing but get loaded. No, I don't do Halloween. I don't dress up. I don't do nothing. So like, I'll get clean. Let's see how it works. And so I lovingly suggested after he had a few months clean, we were having a Christmas party, that he was going to be Santa. And that he was going to dress up as Santa and the kids were going to come on his lap and he was going to hand out presents. He was like, oh no, I ain't doing it. And I just lovingly suggested that that's what we do. We listen to our sponsor and we take guidance. And he did that, man, reluctantly. And he grew a little. And he like, you know, and his foundation was getting stronger. So a few months later, I gave him another son. Oh, my son's 1 year birthday. I have another son and in recovery who's never seen me loaded. I love you, Finn. And He was going to come to, the fellowship was going to do a big 1 year birthday party. And so I said, Kenny, you know, we need a clown. And I think you'd be perfect to dress up as a clown. And he was like, oh, hell no, man, no. And you know, good sponsees listen to their sponsors. So he took that suggestion and like, oh my God, you should have seen him on a beach in Hawaii in this hot. He was sweating so bad, man, with the red nose falling off. But he did it. And he stayed clean and he kept doing and taking suggestions and he was working his steps and he was staying clean. And then the year went by a little further and he had a little over a year, so he was not always taking all suggestions. So my last one there was, it was Easter and I wanted an Easter bunny at one of our NNA functions. And he really said, oh hell no. And we didn't have an Easter bunny that year and he hasn't dressed up since, but, he's still clean with a lot of years, and I'm really grateful to have all my sponsees that I have in my life right now. AJ, my newest one, he's back in Hawaii. He couldn't come. AJ, I love you too. He's a character. But Kenny, we almost lost Kenny a little over a year ago. We got a call. He's got a lot of, you know, I have Hep C from my disease. I live with it. He's tried the antiferrin like 3 times. They're going to make him do it again. And his body broke down. And I got the call that he was at the hospital. And a bunch of us flew over there. And, I mean, they had tubes and orifices. I didn't even know they had, man. They were, like, all over him. And they said he wasn't going to make it. And they couldn't deal with him at this hospital in Hawaii. And they were going to drive him all the way down to Hilo, which is like a 2-hour drive, an hour and a half drive, and hope that he made the drive. And so I did the drive. I drove down with the ambulance and got inside, and then the doctor came and told me that they were going to do some procedure on him. It was like 2 in the morning. They were going to try this one thing, and what did I think? You know, they had no one, there's no parents and no brothers, sisters, no, and should we do it? And I knew God was there with us, and I said, yeah, let's try it. And about 35 minutes later, here comes this doctor running around the corner like, it worked. And so he's here, and he's still here with us. And we work with our sponsees, and we love them. And my heart hurts right now. For some of you in Hawaii, you know Jeff C., our brother Jeff. He this weekend, my sponsee, who I had to let go because I couldn't validate his lifestyle. I could not accept. I would call him, see how you're doing, but don't make me validate your lifestyle if it's not a lifestyle that's conducive with N.A. or Narcotics Anonymous. I live N.A. My house is N.A. Don't use in my house. I have to set boundaries today, and I've learned that from you guys. And like, in Hawaii, there's a thing called a kava bar. It's kava. And like, it's like near beer to me, you know? It's like my disease saying, oh, here you go. It's really not a drug. And in Hawaii, a bunch of addicts have lost the battle that we're in, on a daily reprieve. And he started with that and then stopped going to meetings. And, you know, there's a new thing called the marijuana medical card. And he got one of those and I knew he was gone. I knew as a drug addict, he was gone. And this weekend he just crashed his car. He's all drunk and he left it on the side of the road. And I can't get a hold of him because his phone's not working. But so if you know Jeff C., say a prayer for him because he's got the disease of addiction. He's running wild right now. And I wouldn't have it any other way because my heart and the love I feel, I look around here and I see people I know who've got children and family now and people that have been a part of my journey have made me who I am. Like, I'm sharing my story, a part of it, a piece of it with you. So now all of a sudden, you know, I'm a part of your story. You're a part of my story. That's how it works. That's what happens in here for us. I had a sponsor named Jack. Remember Jack, man? God, freaking hope to die dope fiend. Love this man. He was so excited. He couldn't believe that, like, just for today, you didn't have to get loaded. I mean, like, if you don't pick up, you won't get loaded. He was like, no one had ever told him that. I mean, like, he was so happy, man. I gave him a job. I'm a roofer. I'm still up on roofs doing roofs. I kind of like it. It keeps me healthy. So what? Jimmy K did it. Good enough for Jimmy K is good enough for me. So like I said, I pick weeds for $5 an hour and talk to them. I mean, it's a step up. It's a little bit better, I mean. But Jack worked for me, and I had him in a dumpster on the side of a roof, man. And just straightening up the trash in there so we could throw more in. I was like, Jack, how you doing down there? You okay, man? You clean? He'd be like, looking up dirtier. I mean, just dirt, because half the stuff we threw down kind of got him. He just like look at me and he's like, I'm good, man. I'm clean. I'm working. You know? 4 months he was in NA and he decided, you know what? Just one time, that one time. I think I'll try it again. Boom. And he died, right, Bo? We do die. We die around here. I have sponsors in my life who I adore that have saved my life. By working with them, I've discovered things about me I never, never would have. About 8 years clean, I don't know if I've ever shared this on such a group level, but I had 8 years clean, and like I said, I had a lot. For many years, my sponsor suggested I go put flowers in the ocean for my mother on Mother's Day, part of my healing process. It worked great. I loved it. I don't do it anymore, but I used to do it. And about 8 years clean, something came up inside me that had not come up on my journey at all. Absolutely was not in my conscious. None of my step work had never come up. And I grew up in a very large house. And I was working on a fifth step for the third time. With a man named Hank. Some of them know him as the Hankster. Like, he thought he was a gangster, so we call him the Hankster. He came into NA with a big giant boombox on his shoulder and just walked into the meeting and sat down with it playing. And we're all sitting there talking and sharing, and we're looking at this guy, and he's just sitting here with a boombox on his shoulder. Like, what are you guys about? But every time he relapsed, we'd start again. I'd say, there's something that we didn't get. There's something that we didn't discover. There's something we need to find out. You didn't admit you were powerless. You don't think your life's unmanageable. We'd start again, and we were on a fifth step for the third time with him. And we were sharing it with God, and we were on the beach. And I said, is there anything else? Hank, is there something inside you? And he blurted out that something that we had never even talked about, never been written about, nothing. And we hugged and cried, and at that moment, something came up in me, and I had put this thing so far down, hidden it so deep, was never going to let it out. Never. And I heard you guys, all of you guys saying, you are as sick as your secrets, and you will never get to your full potential and become who you can be until you get rid of it all. Because the only thing we have right now is right now. This instance right here. This is where God is. God's right here with us. Ooh, and the mic. And right here. You know, and like, so I had to let it go. And what it was is like, I was 13 years old. And my mother had been dead for a couple of years. Our whole family, everything was in total chaos. It was really whack. And I couldn't even stand being there. I could take off for like 2 weeks and come back. And my dad would be like, where you been? And I'm like, I've been around, I've been over here. And he goes, oh, okay, all right, see you. Don't eat all the food, you know, and then boom. You know, and like, so I was either 13 or 14, and it was New Year's Eve, and I had been out partying, and I came home, and it was early because I didn't have no girl, and nothing was really happening. It was before midnight. And my sister, Henny, who just passed away from cancer, who I got to go and participate in sending her to heaven, was there. She was mentally retarded, and she had the IQ of like a second grader. And my family, because we lost my mom as adults, have always taken care of my sister Henny. We adored her. But at 8 years clean, I remembered that I had sexually inappropriately touched her on New Year's Eve because I was all fucked up, and I came in, I didn't have nobody around, and my disease was saying, touch your sister, touch your sister. And I held that really deep. Because if you molested my child or if you hurt a woman, how dare you? And so my head was like, you know, not right. Until I was able to let that go and work that through with a sponsor and work that process. And it was really, really, really scary. Because I didn't admit my mother committed suicide. I wasn't about to admit that I had molested my mentally retarded sister. We heal here. We find somebody we can absolutely trust without a shadow of a doubt. That's what we find. And if you don't have that, find that. There is nothing, nothing I can't tell my sponsor. And know that it ain't going nowhere but right there with me and my sponsor and our gods. And that is one of the greatest gifts about sponsorship. That I know that Kenny can come to me, tell me anything, and he knows it ain't going nowhere except with him and me and his and my God. That's a really powerful thing that we get here. And like I said, I don't do men well. I just don't do men well. And when I got here, I wanted a female sponsor bad. And I'm at that place. Like I said, I'm in 23 years of recovery. We're a worldwide fellowship. We're a really big fellowship. I heard my lovely sister who I just met share about having a man for a sponsor. You know what? I think we have to get to a place where we don't, you know, judge gender or race or whatever. I think we need to, like, look at that. If that connection with that human being is somebody other than your race, I am not going to judge you. I am not. It is not my job. All I know is find that person that you can have in your life without a shadow of a doubt. Without a shadow of a doubt. That's what we need. The thing I want to share, are we almost done? I don't even know what time. But I hear sponsor. You're laughing at me, girls. I saw that. Anyhow, what we need here for me, what I need here is... We talk about sponsorship and sponsors, but with me today, what goes with that is a support group. Like if you've got long time recovery, I can guarantee you that you have a support group that you can call at any time who's going to come rushing over and save your ass. And I think that's just as important as a sponsor is to have a really strong support group. And I did not do men. I had a really hard time with it here. But I wanted it so bad. I craved it so much. I wanted to be like one of the guys, you know? And I'm going to tell you this little story because it changed my life. And my sponsor used to laugh at me so much about this. So I'm a dope fiend from New York who went to Hawaii to get clean, right? So I'm not real hip on... And I never had like, you know, I didn't have any... desires. I wanted to get loaded, you know, and I wanted to get the biggest, baddest bag, and I was good. So I never ever dreamt about going to Hawaii, you know, and like, and all that it had to do with. And so I got there, got a sponsor, started feeling it out, and I couldn't. I was so crippled emotionally that I'll never forget this. It was Thursday night. Been there a couple of months, still hadn't spoken in a meeting, and it was on this beach, Ka'alu Beach Park. It was a Thursday night, and there was, I don't know, 7 or 8 of us, and they all shared, I don't know, like 40 minutes of the hour were up, 20 minutes left, and they're all staring at me. Not a good thing if you really don't want to open your mouth. I'm like, so we had an addict there named Abbott. And Abbott was a big part of the Kona Fellowship, did a lot of service. He's not with us anymore. I believe this disease got him too. He kept looking at me, and just saying, come on, John, open your mouth.
And so I tried to. I said, I'm John, I'm an addict. And because I was so emotionally crippled, I just started to wail up and started to cry. And I couldn't get a word out. And I shut down, just like Get Smart. Bam, boom, choo, choo, choo. Just like, nothing coming out. You ain't coming in, ain't nothing coming out, man. And like, I sat there and I didn't share. And he came up to me afterwards and he gave me one of the biggest, most powerful, spiritual hugs you get around here, where you just want to melt into it, and you just, you don't want to pat him on the back, you don't, you just want to like, oh my God, that is so good. He gave me one of those. And where I come from, you know, at the Honor Farm of Riverhead, doing a little county time, this time, we didn't do those kind of hugs. It was huge for me to let a man do that to me. And it was really, really good. And honestly, I didn't want it to stop. And he and a bunch of the other guys, there was like four guys that had more, you know, they didn't have a lot more time than me. I mean, this was in the late 80s, and they, you know, they all had like, you know, 2-3 years. But they were all into scuba diving. They were like, you know, that was the big bond where I was in Kona, you know, the dives down like that. You can go 200 feet instantly and narc out where you're just sucking like nitrogen, you know, and that's what they like to do. And like, I was like, I wanted to do it. I really wanted to do it. I was finally like invited to do it. And it was huge for me, you know, so I got certified. I went, got all my equipment, and I was happening. I mean, I was the freaking perfect scuba diver. I was like the one. You know, we were doing a dive, and I think it was like my second dive with these guys, or third dive, and I go down, man, and I see this moray eel coming out of a rock, man. It's coming out and going back in. I'm like, oh, man, you know, because when you dive, you know, if you see a shark or you see a moray eel, you know, you tell each other. So I'm like, oh, man, I swam as fast as I could. I got Abbott. I got him by the fin. I'm like, oh, big eel, huge eel, man, come on. I got them all to come. We were all swimming back to this rock, and we're looking down at this rock. And all of a sudden, this big old 1980s, you know, basketball tube sock comes flipping out of the rock, flipping back in, flipping out. And I'm like, oh, man. You know, it's like the perfect scuba diver. That was like really not a good thing. And then we get out, and they're all looking at me laughing. And next thing you know, like, we're egomaniacs, man. We're fragile, you know? Like, you know, don't torment me because I'll stick you, you know? I mean, like, and they're looking at, and the next thing you know, they nickname me. All of a sudden, I'm Sock Gusto, man. So I'm like, here's this scuba diving pro, man. There, I go to a meeting. Hey, Sock Gusto, how's it going? I'm like, so it's a, you know, so that was the foundation. That was the start of my support group. And like, all those guys are gone. They've either moved away or they died from the disease of addiction. But what they did for me, and it's a good thing because nobody calls me Sock Gusto anymore. It's a really good thing. Except, oh, wait a minute. Maybe some of you might start. But today I have a really powerful support group, you know, that'll call me and check up on me, and I get to call and check up on. And it's a wonderful thing. The therapeutic value of one addict helping another is absolutely essential around here. And when I finally got out of myself, when I finally could get away from self, I found my God. And it happened early on for me. And I'm really blessed for that. I've had spiritual awakenings that I'd love to share right now. I mean, some that are so out there where I saw bushes glowing with a light where you guys will probably start all getting up and leaving. But seriously had some massive spiritual awakenings on my journey. And I owe it to
my first sponsor, for making me go in that Kajavi bush and take that first leap of faith, and understand that it had nothing to do with me. I was a sick little, I was just a scared little boy who had the disease of addiction, who was already using at 11. And I was not the only boy that had said something like that to his mother. And like, she had her own demons and she had her own stuff going on that I had no idea. And for 30 some years, I had no idea. No idea. That spirit I've got inside me that makes me dress up like a pornographic hot Sunday and act who I am, because I, you know what? I'm like a lot of us. I always wanted to be anyone but me. You know what I'm saying, man? I just, you know what? I'd see you and I'd be, man, you got it going on. Why can't I be you? You know, and by touching my spirit, my God, I can just be me. All I got to do is be me. That's all we got to do around here. We're doing God's will for us. We're doing God's will when we're being the best that we can be. And today I know that sometimes I step in it really bad. Sometimes I do the wrong thing, man. That's just how it is, man, you know. But you guys love me in spite of myself, and I am so, so grateful for that. I am honored to be here. Hold on a second. World Convention San Diego! And we still got more meetings and a lot more fun, and thank you so much for letting me share my experience, strength, and hope with you. And I love you all. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John. Hey, let's everybody please thank Louisa and John for being here again. Okay, and we're going to close this meeting up here pretty quick. So I've asked Dave J. from Bay Cities to please come up here and read We Do Recover.
Dave, I'm an addict. We do recover. When at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as human beings, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative, either go on as best we can to the bitter ends, jails, institutions, and death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has proven itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple, spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Okay, that's pretty much it. So how about we just stay in our seats here? And we'll have a moment of silence and close this meeting with a serenity prayer. Moment of silence, please. Who brought us here? Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thanks, everybody. Have a great convention.